Hello and welcome to Spitballin', a Texas Rangers podcast. I'm Ben Rogers, joined by Jamie Newberg. Let's get right to it. Rangers with an impressive sweep of the Astros. The Astros, look, 19 head-to-head games are probably going to decide the AL West. Maybe they will, maybe they won't, but I know they're massively important. Last year, the Rangers won 13 of those matchups, and they won the West. So, massively important to get the sweep against the Astros. What are your main takeaways from that series, Jamie?
You know, to me, obviously the sweep is important and outstanding, and it gets some momentum rolling. But to me, it's a bigger negative for Houston than it is a positive for Texas. Houston actually, you know, despite the fact that they've been sitting at or near the bottom of the division, you know, as the season gets rolling, most people still feel that's a playoff team, or they at least, you know, last week of the season will be fighting for a playoff spot. They just can't get over the hump against Texas. I mean, like you said, last year they win 6 out of 19 games. And if they even come close to evening the series with Texas, they win this division, and that didn't happen. So new season, Correa's there all year. They got to feel better about things this season. Let's start from scratch. Let's take care of business and take Texas down. Well, obviously they come in here and 3 straight games, you know, Texas takes care of business. And I think, like, you know, again, I think it's a bigger problem for Houston to get over that mental hump. It's a young team than it is for Texas, you know, feeling all, you know, so much better about themselves. The fact is they've won 3 straight games coming out of the Houston series. Winning series is the name of the game. Whether you win 2 out of 3, 3 out of 4, whatever it is, you win series consistently, then you're going to be in it all the way through.
Man, I find myself focusing on the Astros and the AL West more than anybody else. And maybe I'm doing the other teams a disservice or doing myself a disservice by overlooking those teams, but I am having a hard time taking the Angels seriously, taking the Mariners seriously, and I'm definitely not taking the A's seriously. So to be so focused on Houston, do you think that'll come back to bite me?
I don't. I feel the same way. And, you know, last year at this time, we were probably saying, well, we're not taking Houston seriously, even though they've gotten off to a good start. You know, we're worried about the Angels. And, you know, that's going to change year to year. The difference here is this is Houston. This is Mavericks Rockets. This is, you know, there's going to be a natural rivalry, and you've got a young team down there and a good team up here. This rivalry is going to be outstanding for years. And, you know, the way the Astros have built things and the way the Rangers continue to refuel their pipeline, there's a good reason to feel like these two teams are going to contend every year with a blip here and there. And I think that's why you're feeling that way about Houston. It's a different situation than some team that we play at 9:30 p.m. whenever we go out to play them. It's harder to sort of drum up that kind of rivalry until you're in the thick of it with them. Houston's different. I think that the rivalry is natural, and the fact that both teams are solid and many people are predicting one of these two teams to go to the World Series this year, that just builds into it, you know, right from the start.
Well, I'd like to transition now to discussing a guy who is a fan favorite, and he's one of our favorites, and he's your hashtag favorite, the great Adrian Beltre, off to a fantastic start. Got his contract extension. He's going to be signed for 2 more years after this, his age 38 and 39 seasons, and it's $18 million per season for those two. And there's a lot of chatter out there about, hey, man, that may be a little too much for a guy who's going to be that old. But he continues to be the exception to the rule when it comes to age and production in Major League Baseball. And beyond that, what he means to this club is so significant. And, you know, we've talked about it time and time again with Michael Young, the leadership that he brought to the table and the value of that, of having him in the clubhouse. To me, I look at all these young players on the Rangers with Rugi. You know, all these guys are like 21, 23, Delino. Then you look at Gallo, Mazzara, Brinson, and just guy after guy that's coming up, Profar, these young players. I can think of nobody better to mold these guys than Adrian Beltre. And you still see it with the dynamic between his relationship with Elvis. I don't think you can put a price tag on the leadership he brings to the table. I also love the joy with which he plays the game of baseball. Maybe if he was signed through his age 40 season, I would have been a little nervous about that. But I have absolutely no problem with the Adrian Beltre extension.
You left almost nothing for me to say. I mean, you nailed it. And, you know, here's the difference between Adrian Beltre and, for instance, DeMarcus Ware. This is not a salary cap league, okay? If you're having to take a specific piece of a specific pie to give to Adrian Beltre when he's 38 and 39, yeah, that can make you a little nervous. And that's why they let Ware go, why the Cowboys let Ware go. This is not a cap league. As long as ownership is willing to foot that bill, clearly they were, thankfully. None of us want to see Beltre go, not just because it's still extremely productive, both at the bat and in the field, but for all the reasons you just said. It's going to be invaluable to have him around as the roster begins to turn over and some of these young players come in and see how he works and how he plays through pain and how he just posts up every day, no matter what's going on with him physically. That you can't put a price tag on. And as far as the money goes, there are going to be some changes over the next couple of years where some of these minimum wage players come in and take everyday spots. It's unpredictable how they're going to clear space for them on the roster for guys like Mazzara and Brinson, Gallo, Profar. But you can rest assured that two of those guys, maybe three of them, will be in this lineup before Beltre's contract is up. And all of a sudden, you've trimmed some payroll somehow, whether it's letting expired contracts roll off the books or trading a player and probably having to put some money into a deal to pay them down. But still, that takes some pressure off your own payroll.
You're listening to Spitballin', a Texas Rangers podcast. I'm Ben Rogers. He's Jamie Newberg. Let's move on to another topic, and that is the arrival of Ian Desmond. It took a while for him to get going, and I noticed a lot of Rangers fans ready to hit the panic button about him. But he's a streaky player. When he gets hot, he's red hot. When he's cold, he's ice cold. It just so happened that he started the season cold, and I really think he was pressing. And you got to give Banny credit for giving him the off day on Saturday. Then they had the Sunday rain out. Then they had the Monday off day, right? So he had three off days to just collect himself, recalibrate things. And I'm sure Banny was in his ear saying, hey, man, we don't need you to carry us. We just need you to be a guy. You don't have to press. You don't have to try to do too much. Just relax. And boy, Ian Desmond is stinging the ball again. So that's a fantastic sign.
It's a great sign because, like you said, he does not need to be an MVP candidate here. He needs to be a productive player. He's a guy in the lineup that balances things a little bit because the lineup was fairly left-handed. If you can use him as a bridge between the middle of the lineup guys and guys like Odor and Andrus at the bottom who are there to sort of create some havoc, if Desmond is producing between them, and we saw a little bit of that in the Astros series, that makes a huge difference in terms of creating big innings. Yes, he's clearly put some pressure on himself. He's had a bad approach at the plate, over the first couple weeks, swinging the pitches out of the zone and not, ending up with short at bats. It looks like that has settled down a little bit. He's waiting on his pitch and he's doing some damage with it. And I wonder if there's two things that might have added some pressure to what he's trying to do. Number one, he's trying to integrate himself with a new team, prove himself. These guys went out on a limb financially to bring me in. They gave up a draft pick to do it. I got to prove that I'm worth what they gave up to get me here. And number two, he's learning a new position. That's got to be on his mind off the field all the time, is I now have to prove myself as something other than a shortstop. And he has said publicly, I don't just want to survive in left field. I want to be Gold Glove quality. I want to do what Alex Gordon did and move off the dirt into the grass and be a plus player out there. And at times he's looked like that. Big arm, he's made some diving stops. He's also had some mishaps in left field. That gets ironed out too as time goes on. But it is very good to see that he's had a little bit of a stretch here now where the ball's coming off the bat nicely and he's creating some positive results for his team.
And it's weird too because I think the more I become attached to him and the idea of him being on this team, the sadder I get about the realization that it's really a one-year thing. This is a stopgap opportunity for both the Rangers and for Ian Desmond because, look, they've got – I mean, we can talk about what happens when Shin-Soo Choo comes back. It's already going to be very crowded, and I think Ian Desmond will play 1 year here and then go get a big contract. The Rangers will get a compensatory pick. But, man, I love the guy. I love the makeup, the athleticism. Now that his bat's just about to ignite, you get the feeling that it's about to, that it's going to be real exciting to watch him. But the realization is Ian Desmond's probably here for 1 year.
Yeah, it's funny because, we segued from Beltre to Desmond, and while it's not the same scale, that's what happened with Beltre. He had this eternity of the prime years of his career in Seattle after L.A. He went to Boston for 1 year and just put up sickening numbers. But because of their situation, they brought in Adrian Gonzalez, moved Euclid to third. Beltre moved on after one great season in Boston, and now he's created a sort of an eternity in Texas, and he's going to go into the Hall of Fame with the Ranger cap on, I'm sure. And I'm sure there are Boston fans that feel like, how did we just, we got that one really good year out of Beltre and no one even remembers he was on Boston. That, you know, I'm not here to say that Desmond is on, you know, is charting a Hall of Fame career right now, but the fact is, it's exactly as you said. If he has anything close to an Ian Desmond season this year when it's all said and done, someone's going to give him 4 or 5 years at really big money, and Texas is not going to compete with that because, not just financially, but it doesn't really fit in terms of what's coming up through the system. It probably is just a one-year deal.
All right, so let's talk about what I mentioned there. Shin-Soo Choo comes back. Nomar Mazara has been absolutely raking. There's no way to take Mazara out. And I know there's, I guess if Mazara goes down for 4 more days in the minors, then you get the extra year of team control. As we talked about last week in our extensive Mazara conversation, don't think that's going to motivate the Rangers. But, I mean, what do you do with this crowded outfield when Shin-Soo Choo comes back? Because Mazara, if he's up, needs to play every day.
That's the point, that he needs to play every day. And when Choo comes back, Mazara is still productive and is hitting, then they're going to have to make some sort of decision as to what they're going to do. You know, one option could be, you know, make DeShields a fourth outfielder, move Desmond to center, move Mazara to left. You could do that. You could sort of change things up every day. But we also don't know at that point, what if Mitch Moreland is hurt? And now you've got Prince playing first and DH is open. We've been trying to figure out what's going to happen when all these guys come back, and then all of a sudden Keone Kella goes down, and now things have changed as far as the pitching staff is concerned. So it's not like Chu's coming back any day. You know, it's going to be a little bit, and we don't know. You know, last year we could have had this conversation after Joey Gallo's first couple of weeks that he's just lighting the world on fire, and what are they going to do when Beltre's ready? Well, by that time, Gallo needed to get back down and get his everyday at-bats where there was no pressure and he needed to make some adjustments. That may turn out to be the same thing with Mazara, where it's like, we need Choo to get back here because Mazara is kind of out of sorts and needs to see pitches every day. So it's premature to say what's going to happen. Clearly a good problem when they have too many players they want to fit into positions.
So how do you decide if Choo comes back and they keep Mazara up playing every day? Let's just say that they do make Delino a fourth outfielder and they move Desmond to center. Hypothetically, how do you decide between Mazara and Choo who plays left and who plays right?
I think that they probably make Mazara the left fielder in that case. I think that Choo in his time here has looked better in right than in left. And I think the preparation was going to be that Mazara would be this team's left fielder. When they were, before signing Desmond, they were talking about, well, do you go with Hamilton and Rua, or do you go ahead and give Mazara the job because he's just killing it in spring training? People were talking then about Mazara in left. So I would say eventually Mazara is this team's right fielder, like going forward. In terms of right now, if he and Choo are both on the roster and both in need of everyday at-bats, I would guess that Mazara's in left and Desmond either becomes your center fielder or he becomes sort of a utility guy that can give your center fielder a rest, give your left fielder a rest, give your shortstop a rest, and DH every once in a while. So there's different options as far as what they can do. But my guess is that Choo, when he's ready to come back, will be in right field.
And, man, I feel like Ian Desmond wants to hit the free agent market after the season as a center fielder. I mean, I think he'll do whatever it takes to help this team, but I think he wants to transition into that. But again, it's hard to get Delino out of the lineup. He's the catalyst for things, and we saw he's one of their best players in the playoffs last year, and we know what he means when he's in the lineup. I mean, it's great to have so many options, but it's scary, I don't know, to think about this offense with Delino out of it.
I agree. Delino does things that no one else on this team can do. And I'm not saying take him out of the lineup. I'm just saying he may be a guy that subs in for someone else every day. Not every day, but 4 or 5 days a week, he's starting somewhere. You know, you'd probably have to start getting him ground balls a second again. Not that Rugi would sit once a week. But you'd want Delino to have that in his bag if he's back in sort of a bench role. It's a tough spot in terms of, you know, how can you sit Delino to Shields? There's clearly things in his game he can get better at, you know, instincts on the bases, routes in center field, things that can improve. It's not like we need this guy to turn into a power hitter, which may, you know, not happen. But the little things that he can fine-tune, there are some of those things that he can get better at, but even with that, even the fact that he's not a finished product, he gives this team some energy at the top of the lineup that you can't really replace with the current mix.
Yeah, it's funny. I was visiting with him in spring training, Delino DeShields, and I was like, so, you know, we were talking about second base, and he was shocked when he got drafted that, you know, they were watching the draft show or whatever, and it said Delino DeShields Jr., second baseman. And he was like, second baseman? He was a third baseman. He goes, I played third base. I didn't know. I guess they thought since my dad played some second base that I'm a second baseman. And so it is interesting. Now we've kind of transitioned back to thinking of him as an outfielder, but started out as an infielder. Okay, so there's maybe something there. Let's finish the Spitballing podcast with the topic of bullpen tax. Keone Kella goes down. He's got a bone spur. He's going to have surgery. He's going to be out for 12 weeks. You're looking at a bullpen that has already been used a lot, specifically Diekman and Tolleson. Dyson's been in the mix quite a bit too. But I just, you know, at the rate in which they're using Diekman, I don't think that can continue, and I don't want it to continue because, you know, this bullpen, say whatever you want to say, I think is the strength of the team. And by the end of the year, I want those arms to be fresh so they can help carry the Rangers on a deep playoff run. But it's going to be hard to have that happen if they get taxed early, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. There have been two problems that probably haven't been accentuated enough, and that is that Andrew Faulkner didn't get the job done coming out of the gate that he had done late in the year last year and in camp. And he pitched his way back to the minor leagues. And so now the only other left-hander in the pen is Alex Claudio, who's got four different changeups. That's basically his game. He's not a guy you're going to pitch in the eighth inning. And so Diekman really is your one left-hander that you would count on to get the big lefty out in a really big spot in the final third of the game. And then the other problem has been Tom Wilhelmsen has had two or three really rough outings. And he's also had some really good ones. There was a game a week ago where I remember he came in with either two men on or maybe the bases loaded, and in one pitch he got a double play to get out of the inning. And if that guy, you know, becomes what we see more often than not, then Wilhelmsen, he doesn't really replace Kella. They're two different types of pitchers, but he certainly stretches the bullpen out if he can pitch himself into a more reliable role. You got a couple guys in the minor leagues that eventually I think we're going to see. Number one, Matt Bush, and I probably would call him the second of the two, but he's the one that more people are talking about because he had such an eye-opening camp, great story, has a Kella type of repertoire, really big fastball and a breaking ball that is swing and miss stuff. There's some issues with Bush that are not just about, hey, is he pitched on back-to-back days and is he getting hitters out in Double-A? Bush is a guy that they really want to make sure that he's ready in terms of off the field to become a big leaguer. We need to remember, even though he's got a long history in pro ball, he's never been in the big leagues. And they've got him in sort of a very specific structured program in terms of his off-the-field routine. And I think they want to make sure that that is second nature to him and not an issue and not a problem before they introduce him to the big leagues. And so I don't know what that timetable is at all. I mean, we may be looking at a few days before he's here or maybe a month or two. I don't know. The other guy who I would put ahead of him in terms of the pecking order and getting up here and helping is Luke Jackson. We saw him a little bit last year. He had some issues, I want to say, with his back in spring training, but he's back on the field now in AAA. Another high-velocity guy that could fit right into the bullpen. If he came here in the next week or so to try to, you know, add another power arm to the bullpen now that Kella's out, my guess is it would be in a sixth, seventh-inning type of role. It would essentially replace Tony Barnett, who then gets elevated, as we have seen since Kella went down, into what Kella's role was, which is the bridge from, you know, the middle reliever, long reliever, to get to those last three guys that sort of finish the game for you.
All right, he's Jamie Newberg. I'm Ben Rogers. We appreciate everybody listening to the Spitballing podcast. Please tell all your friends about it and be sure to share it on social media. Until next time, thanks for listening and happy baseball, everybody.